Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate. What's up?
We're on the radio.
What? Like right now?
Yeah. It's a promo from Live Sessions.
Oh, yeah. CFRC Live Sessions. Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay. Peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
This episode of the Kingston Live Podcast is brought to you by Grand On Stage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand On Stage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
It takes a lot of hands to run a music hall like the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts. From the technicians, to front of house, to sound mixers and lighting, to the administrative staff that keep everything organized. This is Kingston Live, and in the second part of our visit to the Isabel, we sit down with two people that are crucial to the hall's operations. Alyssa DeHoop is the Senior Marketing Officer at the Isabel. And whether it's connecting with ticket subscribers or running campaigns to promote shows, it's her job to get the word out on the activities at the Isabel. We're also joined by Aaron Holmberg, the Isabel's technical director. As the former house engineer at the Tragically Hip's Bathhouse Studio, and a skilled producer and composer, Aaron brings a wealth of experience to his role at the Isabel, where he's responsible for stage setup, technical operations, and more. Aaron and Alyssa take Rob behind the scenes at the Isabel, digging into everything that goes into a performance before and after a show.
Alyssa, Aaron, welcome to the Kingston Live Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Alyssa, what's your role here at the Isabel Bader Center?
I'm the Senior Marketing Officer. My primary role is to market our shows that are in the Isabel season. That is anywhere from making posters to doing social media ads to video content to working with artists and agents to get content from them and make sure that we're communicating our season to audiences. I oversee the box office as well. So kind of connecting that with marketing and customer service is really important. And I do sometimes support rentals that are here through it's our newsletter or other ways that we can try and share and help those rentals that are having performances here. It's different every day and it's different every month. We're really busy from September to May when our season's running. And the summer I'm kind of planning my whole next year and that marketing plan.
I'm starting to sweat just thinking about all the things that you do. I know this is not the only performance space here at the Isabel, but it is quite large and your responsibility is filling these seats.
Yeah. And what's incredible is that I started my role here in 2022 and there wasn't a marketing role here. So mostly Trisha Baldwin, who is incredible, she really took on a lot of that. So she had probably about five full-time jobs.
Say five or six hats.
Yes. So although I am really busy, I'm very aware that no one was doing it before that role was created. So it's nice to see that our team has been able to grow and that we've been able to have a role like mine and other roles that we've added and just be on our way to expanding the Isabel and the things that we're capable of doing and getting more audiences in because we are relatively new. Although we're coming in on our 12th season, that's still not a very long time that we've been here. So we're still trying to get people to know who we are and come to these shows and get
still
to know
us. Still has that new car scent in here.
Yes.
Yeah, we've maintained it pretty good, I think. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Some shows you hear someone walk into the lobby and say, wow, this is amazing. I've never been here. And so it's refreshing in a way. Yeah. It's good because we still can get new people in after 10 years and in a lifespan that feels like I've been here a decade and it feels like it's been a long time. But in the scope of a building like this, that's nothing really, I guess. So.
And Aaron, what's your role here?
I'm the technical director here. basically advancing any shows that come in, whether it's our Isabel season or external rentals. I do a lot more. I started here, I was the audio technician, and I would work a lot more in the hall here. So I kind of know a little bit about this side of things. I used to mix the shows. And now, basically, I push paper a lot more. But basically, if Maggie, our booking admin, gets the Isabel season going and they start to get contracts in with riders from the musicians that will be coming next year, I look over that stuff to see the feasibility of the technical side of things. If we have a engaged technical show, which is not always, I'll jump in and I'll start running cables or helping to clean up at the end of it, or make, I'm more hands-on, but often it's handing sort of the info over, and these guys are so seasoned and good at what they do now, I move on to the next thing. And I host our, I host the people from our season. I make sure we're getting the hospitality and the riders all there, and I'm here until the show starts at least, and to welcome people in to our home.
It's so amazing to sit here on the stage. I've taken in many performances here. It makes me a little nervous sitting here, but
yeah,
one of the things I've always found surprising about the Isabel is that, you know, sort of tucked away here on the shores of Lake Ontario, it's deceptively large.
90,000 square feet, sort of. Some say 80, some say 120 or something. It depends if you include our basement, I guess, or not.
It's also very modern as buildings in Kingston go. Tell us some interesting facts about maybe the architecture design of the Isabel Bader Center.
So Gordon mentioned a little bit of the architect's sort of vision and how they loved the landscape and the space that was sort of purchased to build this. So I think that's part of one of the things that really excited them to put a proposal in and to build this place. I find it really interesting. So the outside is a stainless steel reflective surface. Their idea was that if it's winter, if it's summer, if it's a stormy day or whatever, it's reflecting off the building, almost like not camouflage, but it's blending into the building. And I know in the previous interview there, we mentioned the Oslo Opera House. And if you look at a picture of that, the back end of it slopes down and actually goes right into the water.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know for sure, but I believe they wanted to extend the building to the water here too, but maybe provincial rules or something like that, we're not allowed to do that. But it's only about 20 feet to the water.
Maybe the water will eventually reach the building.
Yeah, eventually. It might. And sort of the building slopes down into the landscape. So even with the neighbors across the road, they can still kind of see, you know, we're not this big ominous high rise that's taking up. It's sort of built in. And so the reflective nature of the outside, and then the room that we're sitting in right now, often you see theaters with red seats. Not always, but we have green seats, and it represents the forest. So it's sort of, again, connecting to nature. The wood diffusion walls all around us in here, they're set up for acoustical diffusion. But the reason they're sort of lined with the black framing all through them is so they reflect the limestone building architecture of Kingston, sort of blocky, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I should say that we're sitting in the Jennifer Vova Bernstein Performance Hall, and this is, it's not the only performance space in the Isabel Bader Center.
Correct.
Tell me about some of the other ones.
We have the recital hall, which was the rehearsal hall when we first, when we opened. And then the space is so beautiful and so well used with the students, our Friday night series now, external rentals, that the name rehearsal hall didn't quite do it justice. People would come in and say, this is the nicest rehearsal room I've ever been in. So, you know, now that we've been using it a lot, external rentals, again, Virginia Clark, from, you know, famous local promoter of amazing bands, she's rented it out for Hayden and Hannah Georges and some other shows. We've been using it again for our Friday night series. So we've renamed that to the Recital Hall.
Yes.
I still got to get used to that. and then there's a film screening room that's part of Queens, and the film and media department's a 90-seat theater, like movie theater, basically. Studio theater is the drama department, so they do all sorts. They have a full grid where they can hang, you know, hundreds of theatrical lights. They can morph that black box room into anything they can imagine in terms of putting on plays. And we use the lobby for performance too. We've had lots of performances in the lobbies besides sort of rentals for weddings and that kind of thing, but it's pretty acoustically interesting out there as well. And our art and media lab as well, we've done some filming of some Imagine projects and stuff. It's sort of a 60 by 30 art gallery, but with capabilities of projection, and we kind of build your own adventure in a lot of these rooms. So performance hall is tricked out with all the gear. The other rooms we have to sort of bring in and build from scratch.
Performance spaces are usually built, I want to say, like multi-purpose for different types of performances and things like that, but not this one, am I right?
Yes, I would say it's built, it's a classic shoebox shape, and I can't remember the century that the shoebox came out when, where they said this is what makes great acoustics for acoustic instruments, but it's, let's say it's the 1500s or 1600s, I can't remember, we look it up, but the classic shoebox shape of a hall. So it's built, the acoustics is for amplifying violins and, you know, orchestral instruments or an acoustic guitar, but we have, I don't know how many curtains there are, but behind every wall we can draw with one remote control, like 40-ounce velour or velvet curtains that come out that are sound dampening. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes. We can choose one or two of them, or we can choose all of them. So if we have a jazz show, we bring a few curtains in. It dampens the sound just a little bit. Last week we had Art MacDonald Institute Nobel Prize speech, and so a talking head event. We brought all the curtains in to dampen down the sound for that. So it's, the room is, we're able to transform it, and that way we're able to do classical film festivals, indie rock shows, all kinds of stuff.
Alyssa, what are some of the more notable acts or performances that you recall taking place here?
Well, we do have Miss Emily. She did her album live at the Isabel. She's been here usually, you know, every year, every 2 years, and she's always a solid performance. It's really great to have someone local coming in here who just got nominated for a Juno Award. Yeah. So that's fantastic. But we've had Jeremy Dutcher come in and perform as part of our season or record albums as well. And he's a Polaris Prize winner and Indigenous twice.
Twice, the first, twice. Only person to win two Polaris Prizes, I think.
Amazing. Wow. You mentioned recording here. This is a performance space, but you also do recording here.
Yes.
24 plus albums now have gone through here, again, in our short 10 years or 11 years. Straight from the early on, I guess around 2017 or 2016, we probably had a first recording. Sometimes it's an external client coming in. We have Carl Talbot, who's for all the audio nerds out there, he is an engineer producer of classical music, and his summer home is the Boston Symphony at Tanglewood, and he records all the shows there. So very established, and he's done records with like the National Arts Center Orchestra. He came in and he brought in, I believe it was actually the Griffin Trio that he did, and they nominated and won, I think, their Juno that year as well. So that was one of the first ones. We've done a bunch of recordings here. Yeah, I think I counted it up. I'm starting to try to get a list because we're quite a ways in. We're like, we've got to start cataloging and see what these albums are. But I know we're up over 20 albums that have been recorded.
Is that you and your
room.
Team that are responsible for those recordings?
Sometimes. And like for the Imagine Projects, which is our arts incubator residency program that Gordon spoke to a little bit, we'll record those. Brian and Sylvie Chang, Sylvie Chang was mentioned recently. Brian won an Imagine and came in and recorded. He brought his engineer from Germany because he studies in Berlin as well. So brought someone in. We support that. I'll say it now because I wanted to mention this in the interview at some point, but for back of house and for front of house too, there's really no egos. Sometimes there can be some egos in the tech world and stuff. And our team, whether we're supporting roles to help someone for, you know, the techs or the artists and just to envision their project, we're here to help and step aside and wait for, you know, how can we help you? Or we'll dive in and we'll take over because these guys are fully capable of high-end fidelity, you know, recording and filming as well. So sometimes we support, sometimes we're leading it.
I've taken in some performances here and the sound is impeccable. The experience overall is very good. I think you hold the bar very high in the experience that you create for audiences here. Everyone here takes their job seriously. It's run by professionals and, you know, who are very serious about creating those experiences. But I'm sure there's lots of fun and hijinks that happen here. Is there any humorous stories or weird things that you can share with us that that audiences maybe wouldn't be privy to? We get to see the stuff that you want us to see.
I feel like Aaron would have some good
stories.
I've got
a few back. Well, here's one that I don't think that I wasn't prepped this for this interview because I tried to think. I thought maybe there'll be a question like this, but one of them that I didn't think of until just now was I came into work one day, and I think it was Halloween, so maybe it makes more sense than what I remember it, but I came in and sometimes it's just a quiet room. We don't have a show going on yet. There's some, maybe it's a tech day. Jesse or Tom are here just working away and stuff. And I came in and no one was in here. And then I heard the door open up above us on the balcony and a dolly, like a little rolling cart come through. And Jesse came through in a giant Teletubby outfit. But he was here by himself. But it was Halloween, so it was fine.
Yeah. I feel like Aaron usually sees a lot of exciting things, but I think I was 2 months into my role in the contract role, being the event coordinator. A lot of that role is making sure the artists that we've contracted to come and do a show gets here safely, you know, checks into their hotel, And we did get a call from the agent saying that a cellist for the next day's performance, although they had a seat for themselves on the flight and a seat for their cello, because that is actually really common. They don't trust to check their instrument. They were denied going on that flight. This is pre
they let the
COVID
cello on,
and
but not
well
the
they
cellos.
Were approved and they got to the they got to the gate, and then at the gate they decided to say, oh, actually no, you can't bring that cello on.
So I had to I kind of worked with the agent over 24 hours to figure out what airport could we get them to, because Ottawa and Toronto wasn't working. So Watertown was the closest airport that we could fly them to. It was in the dead of winter. We had to figure out how to get them from Watertown to here. And the US taxis wouldn't cross the border. The Canadian taxis wouldn't cross the border. We sometimes use a car service and they were booked that day. So I had to facilitate getting a taxi from Watertown to the American border. I had to call the American border and make sure that, and Canadian border, make sure that she could cross on foot with her cello. And then a Canadian taxi was there to pick her up. And I was texting her along the way. And that was, I think, 2 months into my role. And that was certainly nerve-wracking and exciting, but like at the end of the day, just extremely hilarious. But I was just wanted to make sure she got through, and I think she showed up.
Yeah, she made it. So
45 minutes before the show.
Yeah, it's about 30 to 40 minutes before house opens. So 7 o'clock house opens. You know, so there's no more stage time really to warm up. And I think she came in around 6:15 or so and was able to get on stage, get a little audio time and practice time on stage.
All we had stuff. And audiences don't ever know the lengths that you go to.
On that note, Angela Hewitt, who's a really well-known classical pianist. You know, she's been traveling the world for 40 or 50 years. I know that she flew in to Toronto. Maggie and I, the booking admin, were getting, you know, texts pretty late at night, and she had missed her connecting flight. And then she got on the next flight, but it sat on the tarmac for 3 hours. And then finally we said, it's probably better at this point we send a car to you in Toronto and come get you. So, you know, 2 a.m, the car goes out to go pick her up and bring her here. One of the funny things that we had recently was there was a quartet here last year. And again, a travel issue where they had so many connecting flights and storm. There was a massive storm in Dallas, I think. And they had flown in from, I think they're Finnish quartet. And they came in, they're either in the States, they're trying to get from Dallas to here, to Toronto. Giant snowstorm, they couldn't make it anywhere, so they had to do a bunch of different connectors. Long story short, they get here with no luggage, so they go shopping for clothes for the concert. And then one of the violinists forgot her shoes at the hotel, but just before we're about to go on stage. So she came out barefoot for her first little bit. Actually, we went around our entire staff and we found a size 7 ladies black shoe in box office. So we had those ready to go. Then she found out her shoes were going to arrive. And 3 minutes into her intro speech of the concert, our stage tech, Lucas, brought her shoes out and put them down on the floor for her to
shoe up.
And she gave us a big shout out for sure.
It's amazing that you're, you know, that amount of logistics has to go into, but you're flying acts and artists in from all over the world to play here. I understand there's also some resident companies here at the Isabel Bader Center. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, there's a few organizations that regularly come here. The Kingston Symphony is one of them. They do half of their shows about at the Grand Theater and half here. And that's fantastic because they sound incredible in this space. We have Isabel Voices. They are an organization that's a choir and they rehearse here and they do their performances here. They've just started and they have a lot of audiences coming to see them. So that's fantastic. And then we have some more shorter season ones, but like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, we have Banff Mountain Film Festival. Yep. So it's kind of great to see those film festivals coming here. Those are incredible to hear because I think sometimes when you hear really good audio during a film, that can make all the difference.
Mm-hmm. And it draws a totally different group in. Trailhead sells the tickets for the Banff Mountain Film Festival on their own, and it just brings a totally different audience that may not have been here for some shows, you know. So as much as we can sort of keep getting new people in here to see the place. The Good Lovelies do a Christmas show now every year. They came here once, love it. Now we just did our third one with them. So they rent the place as an external rental and do their Christmas show.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theatre experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Kingston has a ton of smaller independent music venues. Not all of them are accessible, though. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things that you've done here to make, you know, or improve the physical or even cognitive accessibility of the Isabel Bader Center?
We have an ASL system here, so if people come in and they're able to connect with a loop device that connects to their hearing aid, or they can put a small little sort of radio transmitter in their ear, so we can help to like amplify the sound a little bit for them. If there's a quiet cello or a violin on stage, sometimes we'll have programmed sound that can elevate that a bit, or a talking head event or something. We've had ASL interpreters on stage as well, and we were doing a lot of live streaming through COVID, so people are able to, you know, turn on closed captions at home, or again, we've had the ASL interpreters for some of the Queen's events where we put them down in the lower third of the video. When you say accessibility, I think of sort of ability to get in and out of the building easily. Let's say if you're in a wheelchair or a walker or something. And the nice thing is we do have the main lobby that comes down the stairs, but there's an elevator right there. But really for artists, and it's all on one level. So sure, one, it makes really easy to bring instruments and stuff in. But artists can get onto stage with one level coming down a hallway from the parking lot. And what's really cool behind the scenes that no one would really see, we have a small elevator that goes up about 3 feet in our control booth for our technicians. So if an audio engineer, a lighting technician, a producer or something was in a wheelchair, they could go into the elevator and get up into our control booth and do their job too. So I just think that was such a cool thought to do that. There's bariatric seats that are a little bit wider in certain spots. There's handicap seats along certain rows that we can open up to get people in and out. And our back row, row O, is completely just removable chairs because most of them are screwed down. But we can remove 14 chairs and fit people with any mobile issues can sit there.
We've also, throughout the years, been doing things that are a bit financial accessibility. We now have free coat check. We now have free parking on evenings and weekends. This is more like artist accessibility, but we've waived all commission fees for merchandise for artists.
That's been really well received from artists. It seems like such a big deal. It's a small, move for us, feels like, but it's such a big deal for them to waive the commissions on the merch.
Yeah.
And we've always had discounted student tickets. New this year, this season, we've announced free tickets for Queen students. And that's something that we're looking and maybe bringing into the future. And we always have, you know, accessible programs or outreach programs to different groups that might want to come see a show and may not be able to. We work with Keys newcomers a lot, mm-hmm. Keys Community Center. Just some financial accessible ways that we can help people get here, because we do have really big acts, and sometimes that means a bit of a higher ticket price, but we always find ways to bring people here who may not be able to, you know, afford the full ticket, and they can either be a student and make sure that they're experiencing music or events, or be at a different group.
I think that's huge. I mean, there's an affiliation with Queens, and in the student population there is really important, but there's the broader community that you exist in too, and there's amazing performances and amazing spaces here, and making those accessible to, you know, the average Kingstonian to take in performances in a place like this is just... We love places like the Mansion and Musiki and things like that. But and there's the experiences there can be wonderful too. But there's something really, really, really special and magical about being able to come here, even if it's just once in a while.
Yeah, the Friday night series is a bit like that. That room, technically speaking, we have to build all the seating, the full stage, all the lights, all the audio in one day. The Friday night series is typically a 1 hour concert, and then we tear it down. So it's like a 14-hour day with six technicians to do it at the level that we want to do it at. So we had Abby Stewart last week. She came in and did an incredible show. She deserves all the proper tech that she wants. You know, we want to elevate her so that she can do her thing properly. Mm-hmm. So the technicians, like, we dive in big time, and we're putting that show on, so we're absorbing the costs as well. We don't have a lot of tickets to sell to fill the room, so, you know, it's sort of like making those spaces affordable, where external rentals sometimes would have a harder time coming in and paying for all the production for that room to set it up. It's tough to do, but we can sort of help facilitate that through our season. And then likewise, sort of in the concert hall, we'll have, you know, the Kiwanis Festival and Sistema, Cantabile Choir, a lot of these community groups. And if we have our day and we have our own Isabel show, we might start at 12 and take a longer day to set up. tech can be intense sometimes and stressful. So give a little bit of breathing room. If it's a community event and I know someone else is footing the bill, or they have a Ballytobin grant that they're only, you know, allocated so much that they can afford, we'll tighten that day up for them so that our back of house costs and the rental cost of the room isn't as much. So really try and keep that in mind when mm-hmm. sort of estimating shows and stuff and costs.
Because such a huge opportunity, I think, you present for, you know, local musicians, local artists, local bands. Someone like Abby Stewart, who's a total pro, mm-hmm. we've had her on the podcast before and watched her grow and her career kind of take off and things like that. When she's here in town, she'll play a place like The Buckle, but getting to play a place like the Isabel, you know, we're always delighted to see, you know, in the local acts, and whether they're a, you know, a choir or a pop artist mm-hmm. who gets to take the stage here. And so it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing, I think. In addition to physical performance spaces, though, because we've been mostly talking about that, exclusively talking about that, but the Isabel also has a digital concert hall, which is a virtual space. And I think that kind of resulted from, it's your story to tell, actually, but I wanted to ask about the digital concert hall and that dimension of the Isabel.
Sure. Do you want to start?
Yeah, it's, I think you were here during the beginning of it, but it really stemmed from COVID mm-hmm. and not being able to have audiences come in. You know, everyone was kind of unsure what the future held and how long that would last. So keeping artists coming in here, but then still being able to reach audiences at home was really important. And Trisha Baldwin, she really took that on and led that initiative, and it was her idea to look into live streaming, to get the equipment involved to do that. And we still have that technology today. We still have clients live streaming. In our season, we haven't live streamed as much unless it's a special event, just because we know audiences are really excited to come back and sit and see live music in person. But we're currently working in the next few months, we'll launch kind of our digital concert hall back into a new look and feel, but really it's going to be more part of our website. It's going to host a lot of past projects and videos so that people can look at the Imagine Arts incubator projects and look back at what's been done and kind of even look at recordings that have been here and more stories about the Isabel.
Yeah, it's a legacy project, right? Like, it's sort of like looking at and going, oh, I wonder, so we've done a lot of records here. We should do them. And then you list them and it's like, oh, we've done over 20. Well, we've done so many Imagine projects since 2020. And like Alyssa says, we've got out of live streaming a little bit, although we are live streaming tonight. So often the external clients or the Nobel Peace Prize talks, we had two Nobel winners here last week speaking, they wanted to live stream. On our end for last season and this season, we are actually archiving every single show. So rather than hitting the live stream button, we're just hitting record, and then we can take selects from that, speak with the artists, make sure they're happy with their performance and stuff, and then launch this digital archive that'll have a bit of a legacy thing to show what we've been doing, in case, another 50 years from now, it'll be really interesting to look back on this. But to your point about moving to the online format, it was definitely directly from COVID, and it was from our previous director, Trisha Baldwin, as Alyssa mentioned, who's a smart cookie for one, and has now our slogan, arts with heart. She wanted arts workers and artists alike to continue working through COVID as much as we could. It was important for her to get these artists that are struggling at home, they can't go play gigs. So it was a very great initiative from her, and luckily we had some rainy day funds that we were able to purchase cameras, a proper switcher. We built a custom tower computer with proper graphics card with our small little team. We sort of have a way to have one camera person, so because we couldn't have too many people in the room, we were allowed to have the Griffin Trio on stage with the three of them and then three technicians in here, and that was it. So we don't have a camera team, we have a camera person that kind of runs all this. We experimented with live streaming software, and gradually it was so great for us because it kept our brains going through COVID as well. And we actually live streamed the Griffin Trio in May 2020. And then we took, whenever a lot of other people were canceling competitions and things, we took our cello competition online, which was very stressful for back of house because we are now live streaming and CBC became a partner for us. So we had to stream to CBC, to their website. So suddenly we're broadcasters, and all the six cellists were in different places there. I think one was in Germany.
Different time zones.
Yeah, different time zones. One was in Vancouver, three were in the States, and they had varying degrees of Wi-Fi because people didn't fully understand Wi-Fi at that point, right? How much you need to send a video and audio feed to us. And we sent them packages of two condenser microphones, I had these big U-Haul boxes filled up where we sent them a full recording kit with a Focusrite box to record and the microphones, and taught them how to set themselves up to record their cellos and send us the feed.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that you're rethinking how to keep that going, because I think it's just a great way to extend the experience of what you do here outside of the four walls to a community that either can't or won't, for whatever reason, be able to attend in person.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. It's interesting that even though the Isabel is part of Queen's University, you're responsible for generating your own operational funding. How do you do that?
We do get support from Queen's about a third of our costs, but the two-thirds is revenue generation. And we do that through ticket sales, donations, and sponsorships, and we do it through rentals. And we do have so many rentals coming through here, which is incredible, but there's always space for more. And whether that's just people knowing that they can rent certain spaces in here, it's always something where we, just like any arts organization, is struggling to keep up with that need for revenue generation and costs being up. But we're always striving to get more audiences in here, get people interested to donate and know the impact and the important impact of donating. And yeah, just get more community groups in here to really use the Isabel, not just rent it, but like know that this is meant for the Kingston community. And that just benefits us, it benefits them. But that is kind of a silver lining, as we can be agile in that way. We can kind of lift and adapt in different financial situations.
So one of the ways that your average Kingstonian can support the Isabel is just by attending performances here, buy a ticket and
walk
support
in the
what's
doors,
going on.
Just walk around. If that's like your first take at it, if you want to, and then come see a show. I was going to say our Friday nights series in the recital hall, those are $25 to come. An interesting story that just happened was when we launched our free Queen's University student tickets, we had a student buy 10 tickets and then donate $100. And you can donate right through our website. And that was incredible to see that they knew the impact of how that accessibility initiative impacted them, but they knew the impact of the Isabel in the community, and they decided to donate those funds. Just that little amount, even like $30, makes all the difference towards subsidizing, keeping this place looking beautiful and being a place for the community to use and enjoy.
We're looking at sort of amplifying our off-season a little bit too, even though everybody in front of house and back of house needs a bit of a break when you're running an intensive season every year.
And your off-season being?
I would say technically our season is September to April, but then usually the Fringe is busy too. So May we have our piano competition coming up, so that's going to be busy for us. We have a lot of externals, sort of Lee Hurst College comes back. There's a lot of sort of graduation ceremonies and stuff like that. But then we hit June, July, August, and there's not as much all the time. Now, a few years there, we had 3 years in a row, we had the National Youth Orchestra come for their residency for 5 weeks at a time. So it was a great opportunity to have them here. They took over the whole place for 5 weeks while they all learn their compartmental parts of the symphony and then come together for one big show and then take it on tour. Now we have them coming once a summer to do their show. We have actually, I think, a couple other concerts coming up.
Yeah, in our upcoming season, we will have a few, we're calling it like a summer spotlight series, and it's not usual, but starting this year, we're looking into having just a few concerts throughout the summer, because Kingston's so beautiful at that time. It's so nice to be in this building, even in the summer, and just have people come out and see.
And the recordings are coming back. We're trying to get more recording incentives for the off time too, right? So we have a lot of Imagine projects this summer. A lot of time those are filled up in August. We're doing four of these amazing Imagine projects. The other two of six total are kind of speckled in throughout. Oscar Evans is coming in October for his. That's really exciting. Community support again with that. Writers Fest brought Margaret Atwood here on our stage last August, and I've been lucky to work with some pretty neat people over the years, but I was like very starstruck when Margaret Atwood walked on stage. So that was really cool too. So the place is animated through the off seasons, but we're probably looking at ways to try and build that up a little bit more too.
Yeah. My mind is really blown. I've learned so much that I didn't know before. I mean, I've appreciated performances here and the fact that the Isabel Bader Center exists and some of the programs that I knew about, and there's so much that I didn't know about. I wonder if, you know, if you could dispel one misperception about the Isabel Bader Center that Kingstonians may hold, what would that be?
I think there's a perception of that maybe we are just a building as part of Queens, and really it's that we are here for the Kingston community and for the community to enjoy, whether it's through being a renter, someone recording here, or like an artist, or just an audience member. I think sometimes people think we are the Tet, which we love. That's a compliment. But it's actually an incredible artistic hub that not only is the Tet, they're doing, you know, very like visual arts, physical handmaking arts, but we're over on the other side doing performing arts, and that really complements it. But yeah, that would be my myth, is that we're not just for Queens, we're for Queens and the Kingston community. And yeah, we are looking forward to having more and more audiences come here.
Aaron, I want to ask you something slightly different. What's one thing Kingstonians might find interesting or surprising about the Isabel that you'd want them to know?
When I go to the Grand Theater, I love bringing a beverage into the hall. And you can't really do that here. And often people think it's partially because of that, maybe the architecture and, oh, it's so nice in here. But we actually have a small, looks like a small fan under every single seat here.
Oh.
And it's the silent HVAC system. So we can't have stuff getting poured into it. And that's kind of the reason why we don't have beverages in here. But I know that's always, people are surprised when they can't bring
don't
a drink
in. Don't pee your pants as excited as you get.
Yeah.
Do not
so
do
it's
it
really
here.
Neat because that's kind of like the silent HVAC. If, you know, for you can hear a pin drop in here because it's basically got these all these hundreds
of fans.
Yeah,
that was intentional.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But that's one thing about the Friday night series. You can bring a drink in.
Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. Put the Isabel on your Friday night itineraries, folks. What's the best way for our listeners, for them to, you know, maybe keep their finger on the pulse or discover all of the upcoming performances, screenings, et cetera, at the Isabel Bader Center?
Yeah, we list everything on our that's public on our website, queensu.ca/theisabel, and follow our Facebook and Instagram, queensuisabel, and you'll get all your information there. And then our box office can always be reached Monday to Friday, 12:30 to 4:30 at 613-533-2424. Some people, especially those classical audience, they love to, you know, book their tickets through the phones. And that's one thing, is our box office team, our ushers, are all really knowledgeable and helpful. So even if you're at a show and you have questions, we're always here to help.
Awesome. Alyssa, Aaron, thanks so much for having us and our crew to the Isabel Bader Center. Really appreciate it. This has been enlightening and fun.
Thanks
for us. Yeah, thank you.
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Recorded on location at the Isabel, with assistance by Timothy Andrews, Alan Bergeron, Aaron Holmberg, Thomas Leguisto, and Jesse McMillan. Hosted by Rob Howard. Voiceover by John Sanfilippo. Writing by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
There was a group of 20 and they asked for one deodorant stick.
And they're right.
It's a pretty tight band, maybe.
A group from, I think from somewhere in Europe. I can't remember where they were, but they asked for hot dogs and pizza after the show. And then about a week after their, because they were 2 weeks into their tour over here, they said, we've been eating a lot of hot dogs and a lot of pizza. Could we switch to something healthier?
Hey, this is Laura Jane Grace from Against Me, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Chris Jaeger's newest release, Beacon, an upbeat rock song that questions how some people look like they've got it all together when we know no one really does. Follow this local artist at Chris Giggs Music on Instagram to keep up with the latest news, including local performances. Kingston artists who want to be highlighted next time can complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Beacon by Chris Jaeger on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You make it look so easy. Everything you do is pleasing. There's no rhyme or reason. You're shining like a beacon. Late at night, and we're downtown, begging to be seen. Light in here is doubtful. It's garbage on the street. You walk through like you own it. You're nervous, you don't show it. Don't look down, you don't seem frightened. Wish I could bottle up your lightning. So easy, everything you do is pleasing. There's no rhyme or reason. You're shining like a beacon. In the absence of a breeze, you gaze straight into our eyes, put everyone at ease. Even in the shadows, every day some kind of fight. Bootstrapped and hard scrabble, we're all drawn.
Revelation Radio. Explore the sound shaping subculture. Tune in to 101.9 CFRC Wednesdays from 11 to noon to uncover revelations mixed into music from across the alternative scene, underground, and across the globe.
Brothers, the revolution will be live.
Revelation Radio, Wednesdays at 11.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present the latest single by local jazz musician Oscar Evans called Crab Fight, released on February 16th. The new track is the first to be released from his upcoming completely improvised and self-recorded album entitled Sound Permutations, coming soon. Follow him at Oscar Mayfield Evans on Instagram to stay up to date with new releases and local shows. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Crab Fight by Oscar Evans on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
A nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in for a meeting. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. Tune in every Monday night from 11 p.m. to midnight for Shed Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFR.